sky. Is there a moon up there? Is anything but light now? This darkness is what I hear. This is a breathless silence. Shadows, the telltale signs are in your eyes. More than I can hold in my hand, running through the gaps like water, aching with a passion inside, deep as the river. Oh.
Chapter 14, and the Garden of Eden. Reach behind you, Will Graham, and feel for the small knobs on the top of your pelvis. Feel your spine between them. That is the precise spot where the dragon will snap your spine. Standing in Miami Airport in the dozy heat, the tramp of dozens of unknown feet and the echo of unknown voices around him, Will reached behind himself, slowly sliding his hands down across his back to his pelvis. His shoulder complained at the stretch. He paid it no attention. With his thumbs, he pressed flat against the thin cotton of his shirt and then slid inwards. This is the precise spot. You want to break me? He murmured, his eyes closing, eyebrows twitching to a frown. People walked around him, some looking up curiously, most ignoring him altogether. Normal people made for everyday things. They tended not to see the oddities or care if they did. In amongst the crowd, Will spoke to the man who was not there, the man that could be seen only through his eyes. You want to humble me. You want to humble us both before the dragon. The crooked teeth grinned, ready to bite. You'll get your chance, Will whispered. We both will. There was only one chance to be free of it all. Will wished he didn't have to risk it, only there was too much at stake. Too much. Jack had told him everything they knew, how they thought the dragon had faked it, gone to Baltimore, taken Lecter, then headed further north out into the wilds. Jack was convinced he had a search area narrowed down. He'd sent all of the information they had on Dolarahyde, his medical and personal history, what little there was of it. Abandoned by his father, passed from family to family to foster care, and then back to family. Only family had ended with Miss Dolarahyde, and from what he could find on her, she didn't seem the grandmotherly type. Will could imagine what it had been like, growing up in the old folks' home his grandmother owned. Stern and out of touch, staring at death every day, wobbling old-timers on their last legs, dripping soup down their chins as they fawned over him. Dying and out of touch, and bad things for bad little boys. Will had seen as much as he could of a man he thought he might be starting to know, rather than just see, hiding in the dark, a creature of habit, a man of instinct, someone outwith their time. He would look for familiarity, comfort, safety, not new and unexplored places. Will was also convinced, not only by Jack. He knew this would be his only chance to end this. It was too noisy on the concourse. All pulled luggage wheels on the rubber-matted floors, people laughing and talking and saying goodbyes. Will found a small shop selling expensive-looking watches, mainly empty but for a man and a woman browsing. He hoped that no one stopped his call as he pulled out his phone. It rang four times then. Ward 6, a man's peremptory voice started. Hi, this is Jack Crawford, FBI. Not sure if we met a few days ago. I need to speak to Rebecca McLean in Bay 2. Okay. The man sounded a little taken aback. Will was glad. That meant he hadn't met Jack when they'd taken Reba in. Can I get some sort of ID? Look, son, this is an emergency. I'd rather not call attention. Can you do that for me? I just need 5 minutes of our time. You're saving lives here, you understand? Yes. Yes, of course I. Please hold. He wondered, as the man put the phone down and transferred him to another line, whether Jack would follow him. It wasn't a pleasant thought. Of course, he'd have to find his way there first. Will frowned. Starling might be a problem. She was sharp, intuitive. Will hoped it didn't come to that. He had made up his mind, not short and quick and spur of the moment. That would have made it easier. No, he'd thought this through, and it was the only chance he was going to get. Hello? The soft voice of Reba McLean was the next thing he heard. Hi, Miss McLean, he said. Told you I'd call, didn't I? I thought that this was... Is this Will Graham? Yeah, it's me. The nurse told me... Don't mind that right now. I need to speak to you. Is that all right?
I don't see why not. Really nothing better to do.
She sounded better, lighter, less close to blank hysteria than she had been. Will tried not to hurry himself.
I should be good to go home soon.
Great to hear. Look, have you heard the news?
News?
About Dallara Hyde.
Yes. One of the nurses put my television on, and it was CNN, and... I asked them to turn it off.
Reba, can I trust you to do something for me?
I guess so. I mean, yes. Yes.
Don't tell anyone that I called you. Can you do that?
What's going on?
She sounded worried. I don't want to get you in trouble. Can you do this for me? I need your help.
I think so, yes. I'm sorry. This is just a little confusing.
That's my specialty. I promise not to make this any more of a mind twist, okay? All right. Was there anywhere Dallara Hyde took you that was, I don't know, a special place of his? Not his house. Somewhere else. Somewhere remote that only he might have access to.
No. Why would you ask that? I thought you had all you needed from me.
I did. I do. But this is important. Really important for something I'm working on.
I don't know. I don't, really.
Listen to me. Listen. He lowered his voice and took a deep breath. He isn't dead, Reba. Dallara Hyde's alive. He thought he could feel her breathing slow.
What did you say?
You heard what I said.
No, that's...
She sounded elated and terrified all at once.
That's not fair. You're not being fair. You can't call me here and tell me these things. The newscaster said...
We were wrong. I'm sorry. We were wrong, Reba. He's alive, and he's taken someone I care about very much. So if you know of anything, anything at all that could help, then please, you've got to tell me. Please.
Why are you doing this? Can't you leave me be?
And now she was upset, and he knew why. You just want to forget, don't you? Will thought, and I'm keeping it all fresh for you.
Why are you doing this?
Reba, please, I need you to tell me. Did he have somewhere else that he would go? That he took you to, maybe told you about.
He didn't tell me about anything like that.
He knew that tone. He knew she had what he needed. And he knew why she wouldn't give it to him. Not now that she knew there was still a chance. Did he take you there one time? Will asked slowly. Reba, I'm sorry. You have to believe that I'm sorry about what's happened. I know you never wanted him dead. There's a part of you that wants to help him, right? The piece of you that he touched. The piece that knew he really wanted to love you. But the rest of you, he said. It's the rest of you that wants to see him hurt just as badly as he hurt you. Will Graham spoke steadily, no nonsense. Reba, he said. I need that part of you to tell me where he is. There was silence, but he could hear her on the other end. She was sniffling. He couldn't tell if she was crying or not. Reba, he pushed. Reba, please, I'm begging you.
The zoo, she said, her voice wavering a little. He took me to the zoo, just once. There was a tiger getting his tooth removed, and they let us in because Dee helped them film with an infrared, and they've got an area sectioned off for maintenance. No one goes in there, and they gave Dee the pass key so he could get in for it.
She stopped, as if swallowing her words. Will felt his pulse race. A zoo. A fitting cage for the beasts to play in. It felt right. Damn, it felt right. You would take him there, wouldn't you? Because there'd be no chance of interruption. Because no one would find him for days if you wanted to make a mess.
Please, Will! Reba was speaking through tears. Please, if you can!
I'll try and help him, I promise.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry he's hurting you, but please!
I have to go. Don't tell anyone that I called, okay? The cash in his wallet bulged out. Will bought a return flight to St. Louis,
a $512 whack out of his emergency fund. It was worth it, because it made him feel optimistic. "You'd better be right about this, Graham," he warned himself, "or this is going to take a lot of explaining." Will choked out a laugh. Who was he kidding? There would be no explaining this to anyone. After he was done, Will took down the few numbers he might want from his phone. Home, Milo, and just in case, Murasaki. Then he took the back off his mobile, removed the battery and the SIM card, and cracked the inside open with the aid of his keys. Will dug out the GPS unit, placed it upon the floor, and crushed it. The rest found its way into the trash can. How long till Jack caught on? Will couldn't calculate it with any certainty. Jack was good at being paranoid, but he tended to give a little leeway where Will was concerned. Considering what had happened and the fact that Will would be expected to blame him, it would be plausible that Will wouldn't be quick to pick up the phone when Crawford called. That ought to buy me some time, Will thought. Hopefully enough. He checked the flight times on the board. Boarding wasn't for another 50 minutes, and then 2 hours 45 non-stop flying. He'd be in St. Louis by 8 o'clock. Will reached behind him and rubbed at the spot between the knobs on the top of his pelvis. The precise spot where... He licked his lips slowly and savored the taste of the hunt. Musk and gun smoke and black hooves running. He wished he hadn't promised Reba. It made him feel a remorse he wasn't willing to risk. A remorse he wouldn't feel when he knew Dolarahyde was dead and gone, once and for all. Hot on his tongue, it tasted like warm plums. Sweet but bitter. More port, maybe? Beside him, Hannibal appeared to be watching for his reaction, hand outstretched to pick up the tall peppermill. "Actually, if I add any more, the sauce will not thicken. You would prefer it richer?" "A little." Will sucked the teaspoon clean and then licked his lips. The scent of roasting lamb secreted from the oven. It had been a couple of weeks, at least, since they'd had enough time, or energy, to cook together. Will had missed it, even if he was now actively using it as a distraction. "Then some butter." Hannibal snagged the butter dish and cut a large knob from the corner, dropping it into the pan. As Will sliced the onions into curling strips, Hannibal pulled a small glass bottle from the fridge, containing a red syrupy substance. "And a little magic." "What's that?" Will asked, blinking as his eyes began to water. "Secret ingredient. You must still allow me my secrets." "Will, have you any secrets worth sharing about making this hurt less?" Will asked as he sniffed, wiping his right eye with the back of his hand as the onions took effect. "Breathe in through the mouth, out through the nose." Tried that. Will let out a sound of pain as the onions effused, his tears overflowing. Not working. Ah, Jesus! These things are fresh. "Best wash your hands and step outside. Clear air is the best remedy." Hannibal took his knife and the board of offending onions to the cooker. "I will seal these." The sky was dark and the air was nippy. Where there was no clouds, the stars were bright. He could see Orion's belt, but not Sirius. Will breathed in through his nose until the tears ceased flowing and the stinging abated. "Fuck," he thought succinctly. Standing at the back door, listening to the sounds of sautéing onions sizzle softly, Will wondered how to break the news. At first, he thought it would be simple. Wait for Hannibal to come home and their bond would take care of the rest. He thought it a quirk of their biology that his mate would notice and take the responsibility out of his hands. Only there had been nothing in their usual greeting. Hannibal had kissed his neck softly and then walked past him to the living room. So then Will had thought about springing it straight away. Only Hannibal had needed to take a phone call, and Will had hesitated too long, and, well, he could tell him later, right? And now it was 7:30, and Will was standing at the back door, unusually nervous and very pregnant. Truthfully, he wasn't sure why he was so anxious about the big reveal. They'd been trying for nearly 2 years now. Hannibal would be just as happy as he was. Will knew he would be. And yet, he'd even considered calling Alana with the news as a test run. Of course he hadn't, in the end. He knew if Hannibal found out he wasn't the first to know, the man would be coldly cross with him for God knows how long. "Feeling better?" Will looked over his shoulder and smiled. In his white apron beneath his royal blue shirt, Hannibal looked as close to domestic as he ever got. Will always teased him about his neatness in the kitchen. Not that it was any different to the neatness Hannibal exercised everywhere else. Still, The sauce stain on the white material by his hip, and the smear of lamb's blood on the side of his wrist, served as a reminder that Hannibal was not always the perfect, refined gentleman. He was a man, when it came down to the grit.
Tell him, Will told himself. Just bloody tell him.
How long till dinner? He asked instead.
Another hour and a half, I'm afraid. Apologies to extend your fast. But I was delayed after theater. And then... But of course, you do not need to hear all about that.
That's all right. I can wait. Will could feel the intensity of eyes on him.
You seem...
Hannibal paused. I'm fine, he lied. If we've got time, I'm going to put a whitewash on. You have anything that needs doing?
A small bundle.
Laundry bag upstairs? Hannibal nodded and Will swallowed. I'll get it. He made it to the stairs before he realized, turning back sharply. Hannibal had been following him, like he felt he had. The man stood like a sharp-eyed statue in the doorway while Will watched, mouth slightly parted. It felt real somehow, this. Before, what was between them could have been anything. Make-believe, a fairy tale, a life he might be forced to one day wake from. Sometimes it seemed so far from what he'd expected his life to be that it was a little surreal. There was a dreamlike quality that circled them constantly, making Will dizzy with the energy of it. They were a content little froth of life atop the water, always prone to the swell that would rise and pull them under. I'm pregnant. And now it was concrete, solid, unmovable. Sometimes, Will thought, if we believe the fairy tale long enough, even it becomes true. There were no words. Hannibal seemed to understand that. Will stayed stock still as his mate approached, reaching up to slide a waiting hand against Will's chest. It slid lower, softly moving across his shirt.
What does this mean to you? He wondered. Our child. I want to teach them about the world. To find them a dog to love. To show them how to ride a bike. To take them on boat trips. Teach them to fish. Hate the people that make them miserable and resent the people that they'll eventually leave me for. Be sad as they grow up, but glad that they are growing up well, and knowing that I'll always be there for them, no matter what. Is that what you want? He could not ask, because he feared the answer might be as damning as it could be reassuring. Instead, as he watched Hannibal's hand descend, Will realized that he couldn't be completely certain that their futures were the same, and the thought scared him. The slight frown on Hannibal's face read, I thought I would have known. Well, he watched his own fingers linger against the front of Will's pelvis. Eventually, he asked, How long?
2 weeks.
Will cleared his throat.
The tests all said 2 weeks.
How many did you use?
12,
Will said through a shrug.
Then you are certainly sure,
Hannibal said with a small, affectionate smile.
Certainly.
Darling.
Hannibal gathered him slowly into a warm embrace, stroking a firm hand down the length of his spine. They stood that way for a time. Will drank in the welcome and yet unusual serenity that Hannibal radiated. When he did speak again, his voice was low, murmured into Will's ear.
It appears that sometimes the teacup can come back together.
Meaning? Will asked, confused.
The human condition and its vagaries, wishing for the impossible. The grass always being greener. The clock turning backwards, allowing us to watch the shards reform, without cracks with which to trace the break. My child, once more, whole.
I'm just going to enjoy the fact that this has apparently broken your ability to make sense, Will said, nuzzling Hannibal's neck.
You are a vessel, Hannibal said with calm reverence, for all that is right in our world.
I feel like I should be insulted by that.
No, not at all. For the contents of a vessel take on the form of the vessel itself, much as the tea in the teacup takes on its shape. Without it, the form would be lost, as it was lost so long ago.
Now. He reached up and ran his hand through Will's neat hair, running down to hold the base of his neck tenderly.
Everything is back where it is supposed to be.
Hannibal?
Yes? I know.
The kiss was soft, affirming. Will knew he wasn't afraid, even if he would always worry. Bravery was for those who blindly pushed frontiers. Worrying was for those who knew the risks. In that moment, Will felt like he might be both at once, and it was good. Because things were where they were supposed to be.
All right, what do we know?
Jack Crawford disliked being wrong about things. and questioned not only his abilities, but his integrity. He especially disliked lots of people knowing he was wrong about something, as in, a nation's worth of people. Most of all, he hated his boss knowing that lots of people knew he was wrong about something. When he was this wrong about something, it was just a washout, the cause and effect of which was rippling out to touch dozens of others. He knew Reba McLean would probably have grounds for a complaint. The public and the media were being kept in the dark for as long as was humanly possible. Then, of course, Will Graham. Jack Crawford really fucking hated being wrong about things. That goddamn news interview fucked us all up the ass, Jack thought, as Zeller fired up the projector and began walking them through what they had. And now we're going to have to walk funny for a little while. Until we find this guy. Find and bag him once and for all. Lecter was another issue. A big damn issue. Depending on how this went. Jack could only imagine the chaos that would ensue if they lost Hannibal Lecter to the wilds. Kiss your job goodbye, Crawford, he told himself. Then he stopped thinking about it. Wallowing in self-pity wasn't going to get him anywhere fast. Right now, Brian Zeller didn't have the gall to look sheepish or try and talk his way out of their sticky situation. At the very least, Crawford appreciated that. Right now, they needed pragmatism more than anything. We know how he managed to leave his van for us to find and get away from the house after he set the fire, Zeller said as he clicked open a tab on the projected screen. Lang, the service station attendant, he took his truck, made him hook it up to Delara Hyde's van, and then killed the poor bastard, locked up the service station, and towed it to his house. Left it in a dirt road far out behind the fields, opposite of the way we came in. He sets the fire, McLean's upstairs chloroformed. When she wakes up, boom, he blows Lang's head off as a show for McLean, and then he's got a straight run to the truck out back and he's gone. We know that's right, because he left the truck parked at the Baltimore Asylum where he turned up for his job, Jimmy Price added, sitting slouched in his chair, face dejected in the way only a scientist with the wrong conclusion could be. I found his prints on the tail bar and the steering wheel. Cocky bastard doesn't care that we know he's alive.
Any word from Chilton about the cock-up?
Jack didn't hide the utter contempt in his voice. Says he hires PEOs from G4s all the time, Bev said. And I'll be frank, it doesn't surprise me that Delara Hyde found this an easy switch. G4s are notorious for undertraining their employees. Most won't even know each other by sight, and they're lax with procedures. From what we can tell, Delara Hyde got hold of one of their employees. She checked her sheet. Grant Adamson. He's missing, has been for 21 hours, and was due to escort Lecter. We think Delara Hyde has killed or incapacitated him, stolen his uniform, and replaced him on the transfer. He killed the other officers with a knife, one to the throat, and the other was stabbed 5 times in the chest. Then, somehow, Delara Hyde got the driver to stop the van. It was parked, not crashed. Once that was done, the two medics vacated the cab. We found them on the road, shot with the gun from one of the other officers. The other gun is still missing, so he's armed. The driver was last, by the looks of it. One plus? She added. We didn't find Lecter's blood at the scene. He's missing, but Delara Hyde didn't harm him. At least not at first. What he's done with him since then, we don't know.
Any chance he let Lecter loose?
There's always the possibility, Zeller said, as he loosened his tie and scratched at his neck. But then, none of Lecter's restraints were found at the scene either. No straitjacket, no face mask, no leg cuffs. It's an assumption, but something tells me he wants Lecter for something else. And we've had no report of missing vehicles, Bev continued. So we're still unsure of how Delara Hyde's transporting them. What can I say? G4s was a big risk. Of course they're cheap, Beverly said acidly, which must have appealed to Chilton, I'm sure.
Of course it did, Jack said curtly. Stupid bastard. This goes south, I'm pinning this shitstorm on that incompetent fool. No two ways about it. He won't wiggle out of this one.
There was a pause, while Jack collected himself and everyone looked elsewhere.
All right, take me back to the house. What else do we have?
We think he might have even had Lang's body on a chair that he tipped, to simulate the sound of a falling body, Beverly Katz interjected as she picked up a paper report. Turns out Lang had no teeth. He was a perfect patsy, so to speak. The key around his neck that Delara Hyde engineered, that was just to force Reba to search the body, make sure she confirmed he was dead.
Right. All right. And the teeth?
His grandmother's, Zeller said, pushing a stapled few sheets Jack's way. Crawford picked them up. A report from the Smithsonian. Upper plate, vulcanite. Unusual and anachronistic substance. Replaced since by acrylic. Not in use for 50 years. We confirmed it, Zeller continued. Located Ned Voigt, the stepson of Dolarahyde's mother. He said he met Mr. Dolarahyde once when he was a kid and never forgot the teeth.
The metal hip joint, Jack asked with a sigh.
There wasn't enough left of it by the time the fire was through and done with. That explosion wiped out quite a lot of the evidence. Dolarahyde had a locker of dynamite in the basement. Went off like a depth charge once the fire ate through the box. It was lucky Will had Reba out of there. Went off about 5 minutes after they carted the two of them to the hospital.
Then we have just enough to hang ourselves with,
Jack said, rubbing his eyes. Silence. They stared at each other over the messy table, like reprimanded schoolchildren being forced to sit in the corner and think about what they had done.
Has Will called? Beverly asked, looking at her watch. He should have landed half an hour ago.
Maybe you'd better give him a call, Jack offered.
Bev stood and left the room, fishing in her pocket for her phone.
I don't think I'm his favorite person right now.
How'd he take it? Brian asked, fixing Jack with a stare.
He was calm, quiet, and reasonable, which means he's fucking pissed. If Dolarahyde had taken anyone but Lecter, I don't think he would have even agreed to come back. That's how I see it.
Well, then, lucky for us it is Lecter, Jimmy said, tipping his head in a shrug. All eyes looked to him. Because now we can be sure Will's going to find him, no matter what.
Washing his hands still left the gray smudges apparent, mucky little marks on the stretch of skin between his fingers and his thumb. He dried his hand on the hand towel before pulling it off the rail and dumping it in the laundry. Hannibal found him as he was searching for another in the bedroom cupboard.
We're down for the 20th,
he informed Will as he disappeared in the walk-in wardrobe. Will took a moment thinking. Is this for Grant's dinner?
Of course.
I'd really rather not. There... Will paused, picking up a yellow towel and scrunching it between his fingers. There was a moment of déjà vu. He liked the feeling even as it prickled.
You won't enjoy yourself. Neither will I. So why are we going?
Because Mr. Gregory Grant's daughter donated a large sum of money to the unit at St. James, and Marissa expects us to attend.
Marissa, your boss is coming?
Will asked, looking up as Hannibal reemerged, carrying a navy blue suit in one hand, an off-cream shirt in the other.
Naturally,
Hannibal said, as he laid out his clothes on the king-size bed. The yellow of the bedspread clashed with the blue horribly. Will gestured to the clothes.
So you're going to Kallstein's talk on genetics tonight? I thought you said he was a small-minded man that spouted bullshit.
I feel you are paraphrasing me, and I was invited. It would be rude not to.
Well, if you do, please don't insult him like last time. I had to put up with his sister on my case for weeks. Anyway, what was I saying before? Right, your boss. I thought you'd never talk to her again after she complained about your pork at dinner the other month. What did she say? Dry as a desert. Something like that.
Only a true artist accepts criticism.
And only someone who can't accept criticism makes statements about accepting criticism.
You always slide the knife in so sweetly.
Hannibal smiled, eyes catching the light impishly as he watched Will hover nearby.
Someone has to.
I quite agree. Now, the 20th.
Hannibal approached him, catching him by the waist.
Shall I go alone?
Course not.
Will waved away the suggestion and slung the towel over his arm.
Couldn't stand the thought of you stuck there, bored out of your skull. I'll just have to suck it up, I suppose. Do you want me to find something from the cellar to take along?
Nothing from the vintage. Perhaps a Merlot. I believe they're serving duck.
You're the boss.
And then suddenly they were close enough that the nose came into play. Will watched as Hannibal almost closed his eyes, leaning in slightly as if to lift the delicate fragrance from the air. Their eyes caught each other like barbed hooks. Will wished to look away, only he could not.
You have been to the shooting range.
Yeah.
Will said with a sigh, thinking of the gunpowder smudges on his hands.
Just in the mood, I guess.
Stressed? I didn't realize you had that much on your mind.
It's nothing. Just work. I suppose no one wants to publish only semi-specific glances into the subject matter.
My dearest, Hannibal tutted through a wicked smile.
Are you to make a statement about accepting criticisms? I hope not. I know you cannot accept them.
Oh, whisper sweet nothings to me, Will said sarcastically.
I would not dare to whisper the troubles of the one I love.
Not troubles, just... Will frowned. Becoming a little difficult to feel useless all the time.
All the time?
Hannibal raised a brow. Will gave another one-shoulder shrug, and subconsciously shifted closer. I used to have a place. I used to have a job that let me know what I was for. Now I'm adrift, a ship on the sea. I suppose I'm just afraid of running aground.
There is no chance of that, surely.
Hannibal whispered, leaning closer, the words caressing the shell of his ear. Are you my starry night sky? Will smiled. Shall I look up to find my way back home?
He'd expected a kiss, not the sudden savaging his neck received.
Hannibal had always been a slippery one when it came to expectations. Will knew his mate enjoyed it, the unpredictability. He felt himself go weak at the knees, clinging to Hannibal as the man sank his teeth near to breaking point at the joint of neck and shoulder.
Hannibal,
Will keened involuntarily. When the teeth receded, a tongue lapped at the abused flesh. Will stayed close, fingers curling in and out of Hannibal's silk shirt, a little breathless.
We should accept unwanted dinner invitations more often.
Hannibal laughed, a soft rumble in his chest that passed to Will as a welcome vibration. Sex had always been an oddity between them. He knew his mate treated it as a game. After a time, Will had come to accept that laying in wait until the subject was unsuspecting. That was the lure to Hannibal's libido. Will's reaction was his foreplay. The sex was almost inconsequential, but for the fact that the hedonist and Hannibal clearly enjoyed the pleasure it gave. And then there were the times when something just set him off. No games, no long, drawn-out machinations, no power trips, just sheer, unmitigated attraction. As Will pulled away and started unbuttoning his shirt, walking backwards towards the bed as he held Hannibal's ravenous stare, he thought this might be one of those times.
When do you have to be at this talk?
He asked through half-lidded eyes.
I...
Hannibal stalled. Will knew he had him. The man was rarely without words. His shirt fell half off one shoulder, still clinging to him loosely. Will undid his fly and let his trousers hang loose on his hips. When Will crawled up onto the bed, he thought he might have seen Hannibal's nostrils flare.
Stay?
Will asked, letting his legs splay as he leaned up on his elbows.
How could I refuse you?
Hannibal asked, walking as slowly as his need would allow. Talk of others fell to the wayside as they lost themselves in each other. Will knew the doubt would always be there, that his choices had been misguided or wrong, but that, in the end, he need only look up to his night sky.
Hannibal?
Hmm? Said through a mouthful of skin. Fuck me till I can't remember my own name.
Your wish.
Hannibal jerked Will to him violently. My command. The Mid-America arm smelled of chili metal, gunpowder from the test range, and stale carpet. It sported a long, glass counter, behind which stood a burly man with a handlebar mustache and a tattoo at his neck that didn't match his red, generic employee's uniform.
You need ammo for that, too?
He asked.
I'll take a box of 38s, Will said, looking down to the sight of the Glock he'd picked out from the pistols.
Having to go on the flight dry had been a drawback, but luckily it seemed as easy to pick up a weapon in Missouri as it was in Florida. He lowered the pistol and put it on the counter.
And I need a shotgun.
Okay. The man was peremptory and didn't seem the type to pry. Will was attesting that to his FBI badge, which he'd flopped on the counter when he'd entered.
How much stopping power are you looking for?
Enough to push back a man that could lift me without breaking a sweat. And slick. I need a fast repeat. Accurate as you can.
You want a Winchester SX-3, the seller said, reaching up with both hands to lift down a long, black single barrel. It's automatic pump action. You don't get faster rack up this side of Texas. Accurate as an auto can be, but the hunters seem to favor it, so that must mean something. Comes in 12-gauge. That ought to take care of what you're after, agent.
He handed it over.
Here.
Will took the gun from the man's hands, turning to lift it and take aim, the stock fitting snugly into his right shoulder. He thought about what firing it would feel like, the kick jabbing back into the weak spot where the sniper bullet had ripped straight through. Still,
If it only took one shot, he wouldn't have to worry about incapacitating himself. He looked through the sights, imagining the bulk of an unknown man in front of him like a silhouette on a shooting range.
He knows you made me lie, Will Graham, because I was forced to lie. He will be more merciful to me than he will be with you, Will Graham.
I'll take them both. The sun was almost down by the time he found the turnoff for Forest Park from the I-64, his rental car turning sluggishly. It was dark out on the interstate, the park looming to his right like a vast maw. The zoo sat nestled inside, like a lair for some fairy tale monster. The strips of summer sunlight set the few clouds on fire, red embers. Will wondered if the dragon preferred the idea of the dark, hiding, being unseen, or if that was Dalara Hyde's half. The red dragon. Will imagined it was something which wished to be seen, to be admired, witnessed, in awe.
The dragon is merciful. He had helped me understand his splendor, and I will praise him.
A bloody deity living inside a hovel like Francis Dalara Hyde. Do you feel unworthy? Will asked Dalara Hyde. Does it resent you? It controls you when you let it, right? Because you're not worthy. Probably never have been. As he turned into the park, the darkness swamped him. He drove and drove and didn't see another car. It felt like going the wrong way. Only there was no right or wrong way. Not now. Not when the dragon had taken. When he reached the locked gates, Will stopped the car and turned out the lights. He took the shotgun shells and put them in his right jacket pocket, the three clips for the Glock, and stuffed them in the left. The Glock went into his sidearm holster. He kept the shotgun in his hand, held vertically by the stock. Knowing the dragon, he felt like he did not know enough. From the scraps he'd picked through, childhood, medical, a glimpse through the eyes of his victims. Dangerous to be ignorant. You're not ready for this. Not ready. Being unprepared gets people killed, you know that? Yet something in him shrugged and pointed out the obvious. Will had known Garrett Jacob Hobbs. He'd known him, perhaps better than it was sane to know a man so far gone. He had slipped into his head through the back door, by the way of a man's need to slaughter girls as gory simulacra of his beloved daughter. Honor them. Will remembered knowing Hobbs, knowing him inside out, until it was difficult to tell where Hobbs ended and he began. And then he remembered turning up at the man's front porch to find his wife choking her last, face down on the steps. Remembered walking into the kitchen, just as the grinning lunatic had slit his daughter's throat, before Will had gunned him down, until his finger was clicking the empty barrel round and round and round. Remembered trying futilely to stem the nauseous tide of red blood gushing from Abigail Hobbs' throat as she gasped under his hands and stared at him as if pleading without words for him to save her. Will had known exactly who Garrett Jacob Hobbs was, but it hadn't helped him to stop the man from massacring his entire family, just as much as Will knowing who the dragon was wouldn't stop him from torturing and killing Hannibal Lecter. Fear, that's all it was. The dark nipped at him and the unfamiliar weight of the shotgun pulled at his arm. The thought that knowing the dragon would prepare him gave him something to cling to. The fear came from knowing that he couldn't cling to anything, that he had to let go if this had a chance of working. The fear was healthy, kept him sharp, made him cautious. When it came down to it, the fear might be a safer weapon than those he'd bought at the store. When he looked up, the sky was overcast, a dark mass above with no light visible, no stars by which to find his way. Will swallowed and pushed his shotgun through the bars of the gate before beginning his climb. Beverly Katz felt the world might be unfair to most. Rarely there was a ray of sunshine, but nearly everyone she knew had to scrabble for it. It never opened up the clouds in the sky and shone down in a swath of ease and prosperity. What was worse was having it, only to lose it. Most worked for their happy endings, and some weren't capable of believing when it had been lost to the dark pitfalls that littered life. "Found him," Zeller said as he leaned around the doorway behind her.
"Where?"
"Miami International Airport. Got a ticket for St. Louis." Brian turned and walked away, trailing Beverly. "Was a bitch to find. He didn't use a credit card. Paid in cash." "Shit. He knows something." "Yeah. Something he's keeping to himself. I've sent his face to St. Louis PD. They're keeping an eye out for him."
"Then you think he might—" "God, I don't know. What the hell is he doing?"
"Want my opinion? Ziller asked as they weaved around four tightly clustered phlebotomists in the hallway, talking heatedly.
I don't know, Bev said cautiously. Do I?
You ever wonder if Will might just want this over with?
You think he's suicidal?
Beverly said incredulously.
Come on!
Actually, that wasn't what I meant.
Then what?
She asked as they walked through the double doors of the boardroom they'd holed up in. Jack was in the corner, talking quietly into his phone, face hard. Zeller turned, hands on his hips and a shrug in his shoulders. That he might want Lecter out of the picture, once and for all.
Kill him? You mean kill him, right?
Would be living chained to an alpha he'll never be free of.
Don't talk shit, Brian. I don't need it.
Hell, she shook her head. Someone would think you hadn't known Will Graham for 6 years. Will couldn't hurt Lecter any more than Lecter could hurt Will.
Yeah?
Brian shook his head. I'd say both of those assumptions are up in the air. Lecter's a remorseless sadist, and it takes one to know one.
Will never knew about...
He says he didn't know. Who knows what he knew?
That's horseshit.
Want to know what I really think? Zeller raised his voice a little, face stern. I think Graham's a broken man that we did bad things to. 3 years he's been suffering alone under the pull of his other half. Must hurt, right? Losing a bonded partner. I can only imagine the torture it must be if they aren't even dead. Just gone. Gone like a limb sliced off but kept alive in a lab somewhere. Eating and eating away at what little sanity he had before this all started. That's where I see Will Graham.
Christ, you're a piece of work.
Starling didn't argue with me. She said we should put officers out scouting any gun stores in St. Louis. Thinks Will's on the hunt, just like I do.
But for who? Bev argued.
Will you two take it outside?
Jack bit out, turning savagely.
Sorry,
Bev said as they sidled out. The doors whapped shut like slaps, battering against her calm. Beverly had always liked Will. He was sharp but humorous, kind but capable of doing what needed doing. And Brian was right, in a way. Because Will was unpredictable, too. So much so that someone could believe him capable of stone-cold murder, if they wished. Most of all, she saw him as fragile. A terribly fragile man who'd been unknowingly tossed into the bullpen. She hoped they found him first. The air was quick with darkness. It moved about before his eyes like dancing ants. He was too cautious to turn on his flashlight. Instead, he used his hand to feel for the walls and a box of matches to light the signs he came across. He thought he could smell the animals on the air. Hot fur and latent power. The scent of predators locked in cages, watching him as he shuffled blindly. Does it come at night, in the guise of a light, and feel for death in its horns' delight? Will felt the rhyme trip about in his mind. The dragon wanted to consume. Was the painting symbolic, or was it testimonial? Lecter must have fascinated him, with his unerring ability to understand what it meant to truly appreciate your victim, honoring them through fine dining. Will licked his lips and bowed his head for a moment, taking a long, deep breath.
Keep it together, he told himself. Keep it together.
What if you're too late? He asked himself. It gave him pause only for a few seconds, before he lifted his head and started forwards again, shuffling softly as he could.
What if he's already started? What if he's already done?
A match hissing to flare as if to scare the shadows away. Veterinary services, the sign read. Will paused, staring at the yellow sign. Reba had said that Delara Hyde had taken her to see the tiger while it was out cold to get a tooth removed. He licked his lips and watched the sign stutter and die as the match flickered out. It burnt down too far and singed his fingers, causing him to drop it with a swift inhale. The first right-hand corner he took faced him with nothing but further darkness. Will listened keenly. No sound but for the rustling of tree branches in the wind. His world was nothing but touch, scent, and sound. It moved around him like a mocking beast. An owl hooted somewhere far off to his right. His own heartbeat. When he focused keenly enough, kept the rhythm of his body in time with the world, his footsteps were difficult to mask, forcing him to move slowly. Then something caught his eye. Will stalled, snapping his head to the right and pulling into the wall. He held his breath until he knew he felt calm. Beating hearts let you know you were alive. Will leaned around the corner of the wall and stared. A window, lit from the inside, spilling out flaccid yellow light. It appeared unreal in the stark landscape, alone and inviting. The illumination was not vast, only enough to reveal a few ferns. The gutter above the window, a small path and a gate, open before the loose chain hanging between its bars. He watched for a few minutes to make sure no one was waiting. Then Will approached. When he reached the chain, he bent down to inspect the end, sheared through with bolt cutters. Will took a deep breath and stood up, shotgun still heavy in his right hand. Leaving the pool of light seemed conducive to panic, but Will kept his focus. Slipping down the path, he stayed silent, kept into the building with its low roof. He lit a match, and its sound was akin to a dull roar against his heightened senses. The door was there. There it was. Will tried the handle and the door swung open, pouring out further light. He blinked into the well-lit corridor, unassuming in its workplace green. Don't hesitate, don't falter, don't fear. Will knew they were impossible ethics to follow. A faint hint on the air, a smell he could not mistake. Will stepped inside and pulled the door to behind him. It was difficult being proactive when you were anxious. She was sure she would have flubbed at some point if she hadn't spent the last 4 years of her life preparing for feeling just like she did now. Feeling like she did and yet being able to perform her duty. Because kicking up a storm wouldn't help anyone. Not going to throw it all away now, she thought angrily. Honestly, she was amazed by how irate she was. Will Graham had no right to throw this all away. That was what she thought. He had no right to take what little he had left and offer it to the dragon on a platter. Because he's one of the few who understands, and that's a rare thing in this world. Anyone checked his phone records? Starling asked.
Phone records? Shit, hang on, Crawford said, cursing uncharacteristically. I can get you them now.
She held back a tight sigh. Seemed like she was one of the few following procedure. She knew Jack had a hell of a lot on his plate right now, and was being pulled in 5 different directions by his subordinates and his superiors. But that was his job. Right now, Starling didn't question feeling superior. She would take what few chances she got to bolster her ego.
Aw, oh, Christ, Jack said.
She could almost see him shaking his head.
Jack? He called St. Louis General, Ward 6.
Reba McLean, Starling said. Right, I'll get on her. She might be able to tell us where he's gone.
Knowing Will, he'll have asked her to keep it quiet. Do what you need to do, Clarice. Understand me?
I understand. She wanted to see Will alive. She wanted to see him alive so she could beat some sense into him, literally. She wanted to beat some sense into him so he knew what it meant to leave a little girl behind and go off and get yourself killed chasing a dream of justice. She wanted him to know what it meant to be left all alone with nothing but a wish to see your father coming back through that door, eyes smiling. Her father's partner had been the one to come to the door, taking off his hat and bending down to her height, face solemn.
I'm sorry, Clarice. He'd said. I'm sorry I couldn't bring him back for you.
All she could think, as she closed her eyes and dialed St. Louis General, was that she'd make sure Reba gave her what they needed. Well, all she could promise herself was that if Delara Hyde took Eleanor's father away, she would kill him. Kill him dead. He followed the smell, because it was all he had. Winchester raised, pointing gundog straight, twitching at imagined sounds. Stay calm and we all come out of this alive. Will hated his own attempts at stopping the fear. There was no point. The smell was powerful here, the further he stepped. That powerful musk that sent his nerves tingling. Will tried to keep his calm, tried to take his time. His biology wished to sabotage his training. The corridor was long, maybe the length of the building. He couldn't be sure. The pale green paint was muted by a gray rubber floor. His shoes squeaked lightly with every step, making him wince. Will tried the first door on his right, locked. The smell was more here. The second door on his right, locked. And more. Third on his left, open. God, he must be close. He pushed it open with his foot and checked his sights. The room was a little dimmer than the corridor, revealing through the doorway a large steel operating table, surrounded by familiar machinery and clean white walls shrouded gray in gloom. All umbrellaed under a massive movable light, which glowed on its lowest setting. His instincts told him not to, but his senses took over when he saw Hannibal, inert, eyes closed, prone and still, laid out like a corpse on an undertaker's table. Jesus, he breathed, lowering the shotgun as he rushed inside. Hannibal? The lights went out, and his sight dissolved to a useless sense. Will tripped to a halt and froze. All around him! His heart was hammering in his chest. Idiot! Was all he had time to think. You fucking idiot! A chink of metal. He spun, pulling up the shotgun, but unwilling to fire without a target. He knew he'd wreck his shoulder as soon as the first cartridge was spent. He wanted the first shot to count, because a second and a third might be out of the picture. Breathing. He backed up until he could feel a large machine at his back, blind and useless. Will kept his breathing as even as he could. Was the breathing his own, or another's? He panicked, considered dumping the shotgun and pulling out his pistol. Only he remembered Hobbs taking the full clip and still clinging to life. He needed the shotgun. The sound of someone moving, shuffling against a surface. He backed up until he hit the steel operating table. He'd seen Dallara Hyde's description. The man looked like he'd take a full rack of auto shotgun 12 gauges and still keep coming. Will reached out behind him and felt for the soft skin he knew would be there. Just to know. Just to accept when he felt nothing. No cold body on the slab. No warm body either. No nothing. He swallowed, and the pit of his stomach dropped out. Suddenly the darkness was full of monsters. Will could only say one thing. No. Before the arm wrapped around him from the side. Impulse. He fired the shotgun, sending a static bang ricocheting around the room. His shoulder screamed in agony, and the gun dropped as his arm went momentarily numb from the rip. But the lightning flash illumination had been given to him like a frame from a film, caught in eternity. For a split second, Will was shown what waited in the gloom. A towering man stood to his right, his face obscured by a video camera. Filming in infrared, Will remembered Reba say, watching him like a predator from the darkness, like he'd watched the Leeds and the Jacobies. But he couldn't stop there, couldn't focus, couldn't believe, because as his pulse skipped about like sand on a beaten drum skin, he knew what else he had seen. In his peripheral vision, a familiar sight. Tall in stature, graceful in poise, even in features. He was given enough time to say, Hannibal, before there was something holding him from the right. Massive hands, like a fairy tale giant, one around his neck, squeezing, the other around his frozen arm. His skin twisted, the stitches at his neck straining. He thought he felt something rip. The steel table dug into his back, trapping him tightly.
Hold still,
the voice spoke, as if through a roaring lion. Will blanched at the sound, even as it slurred badly on the S. Still, he choked and struggled, writhing like a fish on a line, pulling in his left hand to try and reach for his Glock in its holster. When his hand was caught and held warmly by unseen hands, he couldn't help but sob. It was lost to the strangle, crushing his windpipe tightly. Will cried out in pain as his right arm was wrenched. The scent was overpowering, the smell that made him want to do nothing but smile and open his arms. And then he spoke, as if it were a Sunday morning and they had woken early. And Hannibal was slightly out of sorts, because, well, it was before 11 and his mate preferred a late rise, and Will knew he would lean in and kiss his eyes closed and say, "Go back to sleep," and Hannibal would say, "I knew you'd find me, my keen little mongoose." "Ah, now, shh, don't move," he said as Will fell still at the command. "This will not be quick, and I do not wish you to feel any pain. Such a long time, and absence makes the heart grow fonder, no? My darling, how I have missed you."
The words emerged from the darkness, juxtaposed, calm and devastating. Hannibal spoke so closely that Will thought he might be able to see him, even though in reality all he could see was an after-effect of the shotgun's flash. Everything was still swamped in pitch. His left arm was pulled up, and there was a sudden but obvious pain in his armpit as something stabbed in deep.
"In a moment you will be light-headed, then drowsy. Don't resist. So gentle, like slipping into a warm bath."
Will whimpered and felt his head swim, the pain become a confused scramble. His comprehension lessened. His world slipped. His breathing shortened.
"I regret it came to this, Will. But every game has its ending."
Will closed his eyes and could barely understand why the darkness stayed, one reality shifting to another. As he was laid back upon the slab, he thought he could hear Hannibal's voice following him down into the pit.
"My remarkable darling, I do admire your courage. I think I'll eat your heart."